You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call game? I called game.
Gilbert, fade away.
Hello and welcome once again to the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standick here coming at you guys. It's basically halftime of the Celtics-Cavaliers game. I was going to sort of wait till later to record this intro, but this game's looking pretty darn interesting at halftime. Celtics up 10, LeBron's got four fouls, so want to get to that. But here's what is on tap today. This is the final part of my conversation with Kyle Wiedeye from Truth About It. .net. In part one, we look back at the Celtics series and the playoffs as a whole. Part two, we look back at the season as overall. And now we're looking ahead. We're staying with the same truth or truthiness kind of theme for this, but we're getting into more topics that have to do with things that are coming up. And I really think probably the best part I thought with this conversation was about why this summer, if in terms of the summer league, is way more important than probably people are realizing. And also the D League or the G League, as it's going to be, as it's going to come, be called in the future. What's up with that? Why don't the Wizards have one at this point? It feels like we've waited long enough. Seems like there should be something, but I don't want to step on the conversation. I think it was a good one there. And we got into a whole bunch of other topics, the future of, Marchand, Gortat, the some more of the backcourt situation. We talked a little about the Ernie Grunfeld's history here of these trading recent first round picks for players. What does it mean if Bogdanovich moves on? And a whole bunch of other stuff. We even talked a little Christmas Day basketball. So lots of good stuff here. So, also let me say, I recorded a podcast with the lovely Carol Maloney from NBC4. I'm going to put that up for you guys tomorrow. Why should you guys care about that? Well, a couple of reasons. One, Carol's awesome. Two, she just spent time with Markel Fultz, the DeMatha product, who is the current favorite to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. We talked about what she learned from him, his story, and if he does go to Boston, what does that possibly mean for the Celtics, Wizards Celtics overall? We got Carol's take on, she was covering the Wizards during the Celtics series. All right, and of course, if you want to follow us on Twitter, at LockedOnWizards, at Ben Standig, Kyle is at Truth underscore about it, and of course, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere else you do your podcasting. You guys don't know, I haven't had anybody else tell me lately that they're not finding the podcast wherever they're looking, so I hope it's out there and you guys are finding it as needed. So that's what's on deck there, and then I will probably say, probably starting next week, I'll start getting into more of the individual player reviews from last year. It won't be just a straight, so how did John Wall play? Try to pick a topic or two for each person that seems interesting. I'm going to get somebody to come on for each player or each conversation, and we'll figure some things out. Before I get, though, to Kyle's, the rest of Kyle's interview, I want to touch on a couple things that happened today since Kyle and I did this a few days ago. There's a couple things that come up in the news in the last 24 hours that I want to at least mention. So let me give me three, sort of a quick three-point play here of things that are sort of note to me. First off, let's go with sort of the obvious one, and I guess that would be John Wall's contract situation. I guess there's been some buzz in the last couple of days with regards to this. J. Michael at CSN had something about the idea of Wall, of the Wizards making it a priority to get to have Wall sign this Supermax contract that he's now eligible for having been named to an All-NBA team. Basically, he can he can get a ton more money staying with the Wizards. He can get an extension on top of what he already has. In essence, an extension of upwards of $200 million. That's pretty good money, to say the least. I want to get to, when we get to the John Wall player review, we'll get more into that. I would just say caution everybody to calm, to relax on the topic. I guess part of the conversation with J. Michael, or what part of his report was that Wall wants to wait and see what the Wizards do. Just to be clear, and I will play the audio for you guys when the time comes, that's essentially what he said on exit interview day when asked if he was aware of the situation with regards to this Supermax money. At that point, he had not been named to the third team All-NBA. He said that, yes, he's definitely aware. He doesn't, you know, there are pros and cons for doing something now or waiting, and he was going to, you know, talk it out. Obviously, when we talked to him, it was within a day, you know, of them having lost to Boston. To close out that series, so I'm sure his mind was not totally there. But at the same point, you know, he'd already kind of said he's gonna sort of wait and see, and logically that probably makes sense. That said, it is a ton of money, to say the least. It is a topic also that Carol and I got into a little bit on our podcast. You can listen to that one tomorrow. But at the end of the day, all I wanted to say on that one is, don't freak out with this idea that, oh, John Wall wants to wait and see. He's already said that. It's not, I don't know if that's necessarily breaking news. Either way, it's a reasonable thing to say. Again, it's a ton of money to walk away from, hypothetically. So, and also, it's not something that has to be dealt with immediately, but I understand why the Wizards would want to lock him down. But we'll get more into that once we get into the John Wall player review podcast. We're now starting to reach, number two, we're starting to reach the point of the offseason where some players are opting in or out of contracts. We've already seen that with like a guy like Paul Millsap. He opted out of his contract. He's going to be a hot free agent for sure. Two guys that sort of jumped out to me today in sort of this regard. One, Mo Spates with the LA Clippers. He would be a fascinating option for the Wizards if they do, in fact, move on from Marcin Gortat, or I guess hypothetically Mahimi. But if they move on from one of those two, and it's likely Gortat, if that happens, then Spates would be a very fascinating guy. We're talking about a 6'10", big body guy who can play center, play some four, but he's got a three-point shot. He shoots at a pretty high percentage for a big man. I mean, Markieff Morris stepped up his three-point shot this year, but Spates is historically a better three-point shooter. And like I said, he's got a body to be able to go in, to be able to bang inside against center. So I believe that when the podcast I did with Jared Dudley, when I asked Jared Dudley the question of what about guys, do guys in the league talk about playing with John Wall? You know, is that something where they say, hey, I'm going to play with John Wall, he can maybe help me get paid. Spates opted out of a contract. He's looking for another bigger deal. Now, maybe he doesn't want to go sign a one-year deal, but maybe, you know, maybe it's the type of thing you look at playing with John Wall and think, hey, it'll be a really good fit for me. Play with him, I can get a lot more. So he's the kind of guy, I'm not saying he's coming here, I'm just saying that's the kind of situation I would definitely keep an eye on. And the other guy who popped up today, Chris Bosh. The basic gist of the story that I saw is that Chris Bosh and the Miami Heat, along with the NBA, will work out a situation where Bosh will essentially, he still has a huge amount of money owed to him from the Miami Heat, and he's going to get that money. But the issue was that he's obviously been dealing with his serious medical conditions, specifically blood clots that kept him off the court for Miami, and he's still going to get paid, but Miami's not going to be burdened from a salary cap standpoint with this, is my understanding of it. So Bosh will be able to essentially become a free agent again. Whether he's going to play is, I guess, up for some debate still. If he is, and if he's healthy, which of course that's the most important thing. If he is and if he's healthy, he's another guy where you look at his situation. Does he, if he thinks he can play, you know, he's still a relatively young man. If he thinks he can play, you know, beyond just next season, if he's viewing this as, hey, I still got time in me. again, another guy where you would have to look and say, boy, playing with John Wall could be a big deal. And look, if the Wizards do make a move or one of those bigs go out, and Chris Bosh can give you, I won't presume he's going to give you 35 minutes a game, but if he can give you something, be in that role. He's the backup, you know, four or five. I don't know. I'm just throwing out hypotheticals, not suggesting anything, but that would be a really interesting guy. By the way, Chris Bosh is a fascinating human being. I think he'd be great in the locker room. I've always been really impressed whenever I've talked to him after games or in a locker room setting. So, I don't know. Well, interesting to see where Chris Bosh's situation goes is all I'll say right now. First and foremost, hopefully he's okay, and we'll see if he decides to truly get back in into the NBA to try to get back in. But at least they've made the first steps that likely puts him back on the free agent market sooner than later. All right, and last but not least, point number three, I did a quick little thing over at CSN Mid-Atlantic. The Wizards have the 52nd pick. I looked at 9 players that the Wizards could possibly take a look at with that pick, and a couple other names tacked on as well. It's in slideshow form. I know that's not a cool thing for people, and for some people, it's a good thing for websites. That's why they do it. I tried, though, to give you some substance to it. I didn't just try to make 2 sentences and bore you to death. It's not that many slides. Go take a look. I'll just mention here, I did put Georgetown's LJ Peak on that list. I'm not saying if they were to draft him, he would come in next year and immediately boost the backcourt, because he's probably a little bit raw, probably would need that sort of Sheldon McClellan, Daniel Oshefu sort of redshirt season. But I do think he's a pretty interesting guy. The Wizards definitely need, you know, we talk a lot about backing up John Wall. They also need a backup for Bradley Beal. Maybe Sheldon McClellan is that, but or helps more behind Wall. In any event, I think LJ Peak is somebody of interest. And there's a few other guys who are pretty intriguing as well. So go check that out on csnmidatlantic.com or check out my timeline on Twitter at Ben Standinger at Locked On Wizards. All right, let's get to it. Kyle and I went long here, so I think you will enjoy it, though. We start off talking about the D-League and whatnot. So let's get, or talking about this summer, I should say. So let's get into it. Here we go. My conversation with Mr. Kyle Wiedei from truthaboutit.net about what's on deck for the Wizards. Let's go. Let's start looking ahead a little bit. Let's start with this. I want to start with a topic near and dear to both of our hearts. I'm going to get you on the record here to commit to going to Vegas again. Because truth or truthiness, Summer League will be more important than people think this year. The Wizards don't have a number one pick. We all know that. Kelly Oubre, he's not going to Summer League. Typically, third-year guys don't go anyway, and he played enough this year. He doesn't need to go back to Summer League. They're going to have – so they've got Sheldon McClellan. They got Daniel Oshefu. They got Chris McCullough. I guess Aaron White's going to come back from playing overseas. Maybe they bring Daniel House back. That's the sense I got, but, you know, who knows what other opportunities he has. They will have a second-round pick, and then whoever – you know, who knows – maybe, you know, we don't know this year's McClellan or Oshefu that they get. All those guys, there's reason to think that 2, 3, maybe even 4 of those guys are going to be on the team next year, partly because they've invested some time into some of these guys already. And also, when you just look at the team, we already talked in a previous, earlier about Otto Porter. The Wizards aren't going to have a ton of space to sign guys one way or the other. They're going to need some guys at the back of the bench who don't make a ton of money. These are the types of guys that we're talking about. So truth or truthiness, Summer League will be more important than perception. I go truth.
I agree with you. This franchise is in a stage where they need to step it up with player development big time. I mean, it's been a while since this team has really found a diamond in the rough. It's not like, you know, look at what the Spurs do and you see where Simmons has developed or a guy like Murray and you know, obviously not every franchise is such an example like the Spurs, but to your point, there are a lot of guys who could, if they bring them along, become, you know, contributors. And that's just going to be an important part, as important to developing the bench and having sort of a deep roster of contributors as actually finding someone this summer who can, you know, someone who's already more of a veteran who can help the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I think McClellan like you said earlier, he can be a disruptor. Oshefu's interesting. Obviously, he literally didn't play in the season anywhere significantly. He's a guy who's a really good passer. That was one of his trademarks at Villanova. He's got some size. He's got a little bit of a perimeter shot. And look, if they do trade one of the centers, we'll get to that in a second, somebody is going to have to back up the other guy, and maybe it's him. You know, Chris McCullough, I don't know what he played, 8 seconds this year with the Wizards. He was a first-round pick in 2015 by the Nets, who were willing to throw him into the Bogdanovich trade, so maybe that says something. But he was a guy that he had some injuries that kind of caused him to drop. He's very inexperienced. But, you know, if you watch some of his, D-League stuff, you know, maybe he's a diamond in the rough. We'll see. But, they're going to need some of these guys, especially the guys they invested some time in. They don't just need them to make the team. They need them to do something. And that's why, the Summer League is going to be pretty interesting to see. To see what they do. So, with that said, are you committing? Are we going to Vegas?
I mean, truth in this.
Oh no, I don't like that.
I have to figure that out. I know I'm supposed to go visit my father in Florida some point in July, sort of mid-July, when Summer League might line up, and there's some other sort of travel things in the air, which it wouldn't be the worst thing to sit a season out, but let me see if I can, because usually, I go out there, it's such a planned thing, and we're out there, we've been out there for like an entire week, and it's like, it's such a drain on you, one, just being in Vegas, two, you're watching basketball basically from noon to 10 at night.
Well, why are you going for the most part, for a week? You've been out there enough, you're not a rookie. Nobody should be, unless work is making you go. You go to Vegas 3 days max and get the hell out.
No, that's what I'm saying. I might have to tweak the usual arrangement of trying to stay out there and catch a lot of games and just do a quick trip. So
yeah, that's all I'm saying. I'm not at max the fourth day, knowing that you're leaving that night on the plane. Like, that's max.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I'm gonna take that as a little more positive, but I'm gonna keep working on that. If anybody is listening, you can hound Kyle at truth_about_it and keep pressing him on whether he's going to Vegas, because you want his opinion on that. Plus, I need a wingman. I can't be left out in Vegas by myself.
Well, your boy Adam Rubin will definitely be out there too.
But he's got like his own agenda. He's got like people. He's like, he's talking. who knows what he's doing? He's like legitimately there. Like, he's watching all of it. Like, I'm watching the Wizards.
Yeah.
I'll watch some other stuff, but I can't watch 10 hours of it.
Oh yeah, he's done the trip for like several years running. We're talking about at least 8, I think, with a group of buddies that he goes out there with. So he's like a veteran, a super veteran here.
Right. And then if I'm there with like the other guys, like I know, like from CSN, they're all in there and they're like expense reports. I can't compete with them. They like want to go to like the fancy steak places. I'm like, come on. Let's go to Chipotle for once.
Right.
But speaking about all of these types of guys, the McClellans, the Oshefus and all that, let's get to another one. Truth or truthiness, it's about time we make a bigger stink about the Wizards not having a D-League team, or I guess a G-League team, by the time we get to next year. They're building a practice facility. We've all talked about this. It's not going to be ready till 2018-19, and the story has been that's when they're going to have the team. What's the wait? Like, I'm no business guy. I'm not that, I can barely organize my own life when it comes to balancing checkbooks and things like that. But I think the deal now is with the Clippers getting their own D-League team, 26 of the 30 NBA teams will now have their own D-League team, I think, by next year. It seems to me, if we're just talking straight competitive advantage, the Wizards don't have one with this. And this was not one of those Randy Whitman teams where the back of the roster were three guys who were like 27 or older. They literally this year, they sent McClellan, McCullough, and House to the D-League. But everybody admits it. If you just send them out there to the world, just pick a D-League team and go play, it's not the same thing. You're on somebody else's account, and they're going to do whatever they kind of want to do. Well, what's the point? If you want to develop these guys, it's good that I had no issue with them going with those three young guys at the end of the roster. But you got to figure out a way to develop these guys better. And I don't quite understand. Maybe I'm missing something here, but why can't you have a D-League team? Play them at the Patriot Center. Play them at Towson where you did training camp. Make a deal with them where you're going to have training camp and the G-League team. Whatever it is, why can't this happen already?
I'm with you, man. It's pretty absurd, and I do think it puts the Wizards at a competitive disadvantage. And, you know, you have two arena football teams, yeah. You know, and I know, like, part of it was, you know, it's one of those, like, oh, the latest new marketing craze. Let's take advantage of people liking football. Ted has to be a part of that. Oh, then the arena league is like teams are either folding or leaving left and right. So basically you're having to prop up a 5-team league by owning two teams. So it can't be a money thing if you're investing in arena football. He's also, Ted Leonsis is also investing in esports, whatever, that's fine. It's a new, dazzling, next marketing thing. I guess if you're an entrepreneur, you have to go after things like this. But this is where, like, not having a D-League team is the biggest crock of shit, pardon my language. It's probably the number one area where Ted Leonsis has really not kept his word, or at least supported enough one of the list or aspirations that he wanted to do and being able to develop players for his NBA franchise. You know, certainly we've seen, you know, obviously the NHL is set up a little bit differently in terms of minor leagues, but, you know, the Hershey Bears have been a big part of what the Capitals are trying to do. It just seems to be completely absurd and counterproductive that the Wizards are one of the last teams to get their own D-League franchise at this point.
And let's also mention this. I don't have the details in front of me because I forgot to look this up. But this we're coming into a new thing with the NBA this year. They're going to actually have two-way contracts. Where, in other words, instead of the regular 15-man roster, right? Tell me if I'm wrong on this. Instead of just the regular 15-man roster, you can have two players who are in the D League, and you can bring them up as needed on some level, right? Isn't that the deal?
Yeah, I think so, and I couldn't remember if that went into effect. Yeah, I think it does, because that was part of the new CBA continuance and where they made some adjustments that would be effective immediately. But yeah, I think, you know, did the Wizards, and that's one thing I've been saying, it's a hindrance. You're not going to encourage teams to develop in the minor league if you have to always take up one of your 15 roster spots with a D-League assignment. So this is a big thing, and the Wizards are kind of caught with their pants down and not having a better setup to develop young players that they seem to have a lot now, given that they, you know, they signed three undrafted free agents last year. Obviously, House got cut at some point when you brought Brandon Jennings in. But yeah, it's absurd.
And you know, I mean, I was sort of playing dumb there for a second. I mean, I just didn't have it in front of me and. My brain is so fried these days. I don't always remember every detail, but yeah, I mean, basically you're going to have the 15-man roster and, like, you know, now when McClellan would get sent down to the D League, he still counted on the roster. Now they would be able to have a guy. So let's just say you had the same 15 guys. Let's just say Daniel House, instead of cutting him, they could have had him on a two-way contract. He could go back and forth, not count towards the 15. Either way, though, if he's going back, he's still going to some random team. The whole point of the D-League or the G-League, and it isn't even just the players. I mean, this is the point that's sort of frustrating. I've asked Scott Brooks about this when he was at OKC. I've asked him since. I did a podcast during the season where I asked three different coaches who have a D-League or a G-League. I guess I'll start saying G-League and go from there. But who have these affiliates about what it meant to their team and this, that, and the other. And it isn't just the player development. It's also developing your entire franchise. You have training staff. You have coaches. Guys, you know, you always hear about the Eric Spoelstra of the world who started off as, like, the video coordinator guy who worked his way up through the organization to get to the coaching staff. Well, it's sort of like that. You have a minor league system for everything, not just the players, all of it. So they're not developing those aspects either. So if an assistant coach were to leave, guy takes another job, they'd have to go out to the outside the organization to find the next guy. They can't just look in the minors and say, okay, let's maybe this guy's shown enough. Let's bring up that guy. So, it's frustrating to me that, and again, it's not my money. I get it. But like you said, it seems like they have they're spending money on other stuff. I don't quite get why they're not going to spend it though on this product, meaning the Wizards, which is clearly one of their cornerstone assets.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Everything you said, there's just really no excuse at this point.
All right, truth or truthiness? The Wizards have almost no choice but to trade Marcin Gortat this year. I'm gonna go truth, and I think it's likely to happen. I've been told two things. I've been told one, he's likely, maybe likely to stretch. It seems likely that he will not be back next year. And furthermore, at least one person I talked to thought that there was a chance Gortat might have gotten traded around the trading deadline. I don't know for what or if that was how sincere that was. But there was some sense that they may have already looked to do it then. That didn't get publicized, but that's what somebody told me. From the moment they signed Mahimi, it seemed like this was inevitable. Too much money at one spot for two guys that can't play together, and the league is going the other way away from traditional big men like they are. And when you consider their salary cap hangups, this has nothing to do with Gortat, who's been, the fact that he plays every damn game is something, no matter what anybody else wants to say, you can't sleep on that. But he's the one, if you're going to trade one of them, he's the one that's more likely to go because he's got the better contract. So I'm going to say truth. They almost have no choice but to trade him.
Yeah, I agree with you here. And I think the whole, we all thought part of the Mahimi signing, when you're your main offseason acquisition plays the same, your main offseason acquisition plays the same position as your go-to center who's been healthy. You know, the writing was on the wall there that you did that maybe to make Gortat an asset. He's got a pretty friendly contract. It's only for two more years. He's still a very useful player, great screen setter, can really rebound the ball. But I think given he's not going to accept a bench role in Washington now, doing that will be easier to do if he goes to another team. But given just what the Wizards need at this point to compete, you have to find a way to move on from Gortat. He's been great. He was just such a huge part of turning this team around. You know, you think of the Nene trade for JaVale McGee. Well, getting Gortat for, you know, the Emeka Okafor, who was just suddenly sort of injured that offseason, was something that really allowed the Wizards to continue to grow for Wall and Beal. But, you know, everything has to come to an end, and I think the Gortat era has also come to an end in Washington.
Let me just ask you this though, and again, I don't have the cap numbers in front of me, so please don't, all you guys out there who are doing the, accounting in front while we're talking, please don't hold anything I'm about to say against me. But what if I tell you, fine, they're going to re-sign Otto Porter. Maybe over the summer, maybe you have a feeling that Kelly Oubre is going to take that next step up. Maybe there's a backup guard that, whatever sort of the exemption that they have, they think there's a guy that they can get, and they feel pretty good about that. So you got the starting five intact with Gortat. You have Oubre, Mahimi, Jason Smith. You think Satoransky is ready to make that move. You bring in one, you use your one free, exception, salary cap, chip, whatever you have, to get a third guard type. You think McClellan and or Sheffu can make a move. So I've just named 11 or 12 guys. If I give you that, you feel good about the progression of Otto and of Oubre and some of the young guys. Does any of that make you think, screw it, let's keep Gortat? Because, hey, Mahimi, maybe he can step in, but he did miss a bunch of games. And, if we trade Gortat, it's hard to know what you're going to get. Does any of that make you feel better about it?
No, I think you still need to trade him to sort of get smaller. If you have Mahimi, Smith can play the five. If you develop McCullough and Oshefu, and then Morris can also always play the five as well. I think you just have to, really trade Gortat, if anything, to create a better balance with more wing players on the team.
Yeah. I think that's what we saw in the Boston series ultimately. Even if Mahimi was healthy, Boston was taking the Wizards outside. Cleveland would have essentially probably done the same thing if they put Kevin Love at the five, would have put the Wizards in a spot where you had to take their center off the court probably. And you know, you're going to have $28 million sitting on the bench if you do that. That becomes problematic. So we'll see. We'll talk more about if they do trade Gortat, what we think they could possibly get for him. That'll be tricky to assess, but something to consider there for sure. Truth or truthiness? Ernie Grunfeld's run of good trades when it comes to giving away their number one pick is about to come to an end if they don't bring back Bojan Bogdanović. Truth or truthiness?
That's closer to the truth. You know, obviously a lot of teams have taken a risk of getting a rental for the playoff chase, and this is no different. I guess, you know, given that Bogdanović is at the end of a rookie contract and the Wizards do have, I believe, have bird rights, you know, that can change things. But from his comments, you know, it sounds like he would prefer to test the market, and that he would not be super excited about continuing with the Wizards. I mean, a lot of that is, again, going back to his comments, you know, think about playing time and getting paid. You know, he is due for a nice size contract since he is coming off of his rookie scale contract. So it's going to be tough for the Wizards to keep him, and it's going to be tough to justify keeping him. But I think you have to have his shooting and scoring off the bench. You know, yeah, he's not a great rebounder. Yeah, he's a very poor defensive player. But he's a guy who can mix it up. He's not afraid to attack the basket, and he can just really be lights out from deep. And that is something that you have to have, you know, around John Wall. And so sometimes you have to think, is like, all right, if you're wondering if you should keep, you know, Kelly Oubre and Bogdanović, knowing that Bogdanović will probably be more affordable than Otto Porter, knowing you can develop Oubre into a better defensive player than Otto Porter, do you have to suck it up and let Otto walk, you know, given the market that might be out there for him?
I mean, I think if Oubre had just been more consistent, I mean, everybody, I know a lot of people love Oubre, but in my opinion, you're really loving what you think he could be as opposed to loving what he actually is. And I think Scott Brooks is on where I'm coming from, because Scott Brooks would have played him in Game 7 if he could have trusted what he was getting out of him. So the fact that you didn't play him in Game 7 leads me to think you're not going to go into next year believing he could be your starting three if you let Otto go, even if that means you bring back Bogdanović. So if they had gotten more out of Oubre, it might have been easier to say, you know what, we're better off re-signing Bogdanović and maybe doing a sign-and-trade with Otto. I just don't know if I could see that. So, which is why I think Bogdanović is I mean, unless they go into the luxury tax, which I don't see it. But unless that happens, it just seems like Bogdanović is probably gone. If they had won one more game, if they had made the Eastern Conference Finals, and Bogdanović leaves, would you view that as a good trade or a bad trade? Right now, I'm sort of saying probably not going to be looked at as too great, even if we understand the risk.
No, you can't just set the goal to be like Eastern Conference Finals for 1 year. You have to think of what's going to better set up the franchise for both the immediate and the next several years. The thing I'll say about Oubre is that, you know, you're right. You just can't trust him at this point, but I think that's something you feel that Brooks can really teach, and that's why Oubre's summer is going to be key. What you can't always teach is his ability to guard, you know, guys like Isaiah Thomas or Kyrie Irving, or his ability to match up against the other team's point guard, and something that, you know, Otto is just simply not capable of doing. So I think, you know, when you see Oubre, he's got the sort of athletic skill set to do that. You have to sit there and like, okay, we don't trust him now, but maybe he'll develop into a guy we can trust, because he can be that defender that's so critical to not having to spend Wall's energy or Beal's energy on the top opposing player every time.
I was gonna do a specific question on Oubre about the idea of, is his potential development the biggest thing the Wizards can hope for, sort of in terms of adding anything next year. But at the end of the day, I mean, you also can't teach an 80-foot wingspan that kid has. It's insane looking at his arms, the way he can just get in the passing lanes. But I think with him, it's as much It's the instincts and the mental. He needs to understand as Scott Brooks. The only time I saw Scott Brooks sort of get annoyed during the year when he was talking to us, when he was talking about Oubre in that point of the season when he started to not play him as much, and then Otto got hurt and then he got back in a little bit. But he was, you could see some frustration with Oubre that he was like, hey, he needs to be a 3-and-D guy and not try to be all that. And then Oubre was doing that for a while, but you know, he had a minus 28.8 net rating against the Celtics, so work in progress, yeah, to say the least. But
yeah, Kelly Oubre still got some JaVale McGee in him, so
yeah, absolutely. All right, truth or truthiness, the Wizards will be playing on Christmas next year.
I'm going to say that's truth. I think given the attention they've gotten, they were on TV more. Wall and Beal are really fun to watch. I think the Wizards are, because I think they've been 2 years since that game. It's been 2 years since they played the Knicks on Christmas Day, right? They didn't play the past two Christmases.
I think that's right.
Yeah. So I think they'll be back.
Yeah, I mean, just thinking off the top of my head, I've got Cleveland, Boston, who, not because they're just the one seed in the conference finals, but they're going to have the number one pick. Boston, the Knicks, unless they get rid of Carmelo Anthony, they'll be on, you know, they're going for the TV market. They'll be on there. Then you got Golden State, Oklahoma City because of Westbrook, San Antonio because they're San Antonio. Then you got, I think, the Clippers and the Lakers, I'm going to guess, both of them. I mean, the Lakers are going to have Lonzo Ball, and the Clippers, unless they blow things up, are still interesting. And then that leaves two spots open. I think the Wizards get one. And then you could look at Houston. You could look at maybe New Orleans with Boogie and Anthony Davis. But, yeah, I think the Wizards – maybe Milwaukee with Giannis. But, yeah, I think the Wizards have shown enough. Wall's pretty exciting. And, you know, the amount of people saying they wish the Wizards were in the East Finals over Boston just for the excitement factor says a lot about where I think the Wizards are at this point.
Yeah, Wizards Boston would almost be too perfect. You have, you know, you have the green and red jersey color motif. You have just what was built on the rivalry from this year. So yeah, let's go ahead and lock that down. Wizards, they'll probably have to play in Boston because the NBA is never kind enough to give the Wizards even a home, even a season opener at home. So it would be in Boston, but let's go ahead and mark that down and we can make that trip.
Oh yeah. They're definitely on the road. No doubt about that. Definitely about that. Truth or truthiness, Tomas Satoransky will be the backup point guard entering next season.
I think that is going to be, that's going to be true. He'll might be the primary backup, but again, you'll have to look for someone who's a combo guard who can handle the ball, can play either position to supplement that. And, of course, we've seen times where Sheldon Mack can play the point. But I think that's true. Satoransky will be the primary backup to Wall next year.
Yeah, I think that's true. If for no other reason, because they don't have a ton of money to spend, you know, it looks like he did enough. Again, in my perfect world, whatever guard they bring in, that guy should be able to play with Wall and Beal. It's not that, doesn't seem like it's that complicated of a concept, with Satoransky sort of being that, you know, the other guy, and you know he's got enough size. You could bring in a shorter two guard if you were. So I think, yeah, I'm with you. I think I'd say truth. He is the backup point guard next year. But maybe I'm a sucker. Maybe it's watching so much of Jan Vesely highlights today, and I associate the two of them. Congrats to Jan Vesely for the Euro League championship he won. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I did notice that. Oh my God, Jan looks so happy. Like, it's so funny, like how just sad and depressed he was in D.C. his entire tenure, and now he's just so happy now. I don't know. Like, I'm sure a team will give him a shot. I don't think he'll even care to come back to try at the NBA again. I mean, maybe at some point, just if he has any pride about himself and how his first attempt at the NBA went. But you know, I think Jan would rather be the Euro guy. I don't think he has the pride that where he would care to try to come back to the NBA, but you know, good for him. He's found, he can be much better as, one of the most athletic guys in Europe, as opposed to trying to match his athleticism with just all the athletes in the NBA. So, it just seems like the better fit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know people will point to Jan Vesely not being in the NBA as further sign that Grunfeld made a terrible pick. And obviously, no matter how you look at it, it would look bad. I think he would get less heat if he was still in the NBA. But I think this is a case of he could play in the NBA. He's choosing to play over there. I'm not saying he would play big minutes in the NBA, but, you know, he could play in the NBA. He's way athletic. He can get up and down the court. He can do some things. But he's just not, he's better. He's much better off over there. By the way, he still can't make free throws. I looked up his stats today. Still can't make free throws.
Yeah, that's not something that I can see changing much.
All right, truth or truthiness, John Wall is the second best player in the East today, but by the start of next season he won't be because Giannis and the Bucks are coming. I'm going to go truth. I think people who were saying that John Wall wasn't the second best player this year, that Giannis was, I think we're projecting because Giannis, if nothing else, hasn't gone through all the playoff stuff, and we saw that a little bit this year with how they played against Toronto. But when you look at what that kid is, what he's going to be, I still remember that game I watched with you, that first that blowout when Milwaukee destroyed them, and he was just he was a second coming in that game. He was unbelievable. His ceiling is insane, and I think by next year it'll be fair to say he's the second best player in the East. So, therefore, to my point, it's truth. By the start of next season, John Wall will not be the second best player in the East.
I'm going with truth in this. I think Giannis is awesome as he is. He's still got a ways to go. He still has a lot more development to go into his jump shot. I mean, you know, we've seen how far Wall has come with his jumper. And of course, he still has to get more consistent. But I think just because how Wall is such a floor general, and not to say that Giannis isn't, because we, as you know, like Jason Kidd likes to put him at the point a lot, but I don't see him as overtaking Wall.
John Wall, I would say, right, like I said, today he's the second best player in the East, but man, if Giannis, you know, as long as Giannis doesn't hook up with a Kardashian or something and he keeps going north. Boy, it's just insane to see where he's going to go by next year. All right, so I guess I'm going to – you can call me a liar if you want. The podcast, Kyle and I kept going for about another 20 minutes. I'm looking at this going, this is going to run for over an hour. So I'm already way over what I should probably do. I try to keep these things at half an hour. I'm already at 42 minutes. So here's what I'll do. I cut off the last little bit that Kyle and I did, which is having to do with essentially the state of – super teams in basketball and where the Wizards fit in and things like that. I will tag that on to another podcast later in the week. So get more Kyle Wiedeye to hold out for there. So let's end it here. Big thanks to Kyle. Like I said, I really enjoyed this part of the conversation, probably most of all, probably because it was just fresh and new. Wasn't this, talking about the season over and over again. And looking ahead is always a good thing to do. So, Carol Maloney podcast on deck, the rest of Kyle Wiedeye's stuff, and then next week we'll get into starting to look at player evaluations and things like that. Also, by the way, I guess happy Memorial weekend. I guess I can start saying that now, because depending on when you hear this, it may already be there. So happy Memorial weekend to all. All right, appreciate it. Thanks as always, guys. And Ben Standing signing off. Until next time, see ya.
Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
Bobby Trye, caught. Bold drive, off balance shot. Dagger!